the lake to the locker room. Stay locked in with Clemson football coverage all summer long. Only on The Roar.
Hour number two of the program continues right here live on The Roar. Facts and Childress and John Hype bringing you facts on sports. And John, real quick before we hop back into the action here in Seneca, I want to tell you about Burn Digital once again, a local full-service digital marketing powerhouse that can handle everything from powerful SEO to cutting-edge digital video campaigns on both the big and the small screen. Services like advanced geofencing to reach your exact local audience. They're a proud part of the Roar FM family, and they bring you the same quality and community commitment you know from your favorite station. Combine Burn Digital with an ad campaign on The Roar for potent marketing strategy, and you can discover how Burn Digital can make you stand out online going to theroarfm.com and clicking on the advertising tab to get in contact. That's theroarfm.com and clicking on the advertising tab to get in contact. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in. Phone lines and Adams Co. Roofing text line will be open for this segment. We've got back-to-back interviews slated here at Upcountry Fiber in the upcoming segment, so if you want to get in now at 654-ROAR. John, Game 7 of the NBA Finals. It's the ultimate stage. The whole world is watching, and it's the first one we've had since 2016, which delivered maybe one of the greatest closings to an NBA game we've seen in the history of the Finals, with LeBron with the block on Iguodala and Kyrie hitting the step-back three over Steph Curry to give the Cleveland Cavs their first NBA championship and LeBron bringing it back to Cleveland. Well, 9 years later, we've got a complete inverse on storylines, you know? In that series, we had two established teams and stars. It was Steph versus LeBron. It was a rematch of the Finals the year prior. This year, it was an upstart team in Indiana that was young and had all these miraculous moments, and an OKC team that dominated the league in the regular season and really ran into adversity for the first time all year in the postseason. OKC takes home the victory, but the biggest storyline, again, similar to College World Series and what we had been discussing along those lines, Tyrese Haliburton appears to have ruptured his Achilles in the first quarter of the game last night in the Finals. And again, this isn't taking anything away from the Thunder, who are a deserving champion, and we'll unpack all of the moments and the context and the nuance to their whole championship run and more. But it's hard to focus on anything other than the darling of the playoffs and America's star in Tyrese Haliburton, who, once again, if we're being objective, delivered one of the best playoff runs in the history of this league. To have his season end in such a traumatic fashion, that's one of the most heartbreaking moments in the history of my tenure watching sports, to be honest.
It's gut-wrenching. It's awful. I don't know how I would process this if I was a Pacers fan. More on that at noon today. I think the gut punch of it, I guess worse than anything, was how dominant you were in Game 6.
Yeah.
And it looked like you were on a collision course for greatness if that injury didn't happen. With the way they were playing, they had the lead at half.
Yep.
And I feel like they just didn't have another gear when they came out of the locker room in the second half. And it just, so not only do you lose Game 7 in such a heartbreaking and excruciating way, but so much of the talk throughout these playoffs had been, even if the Pacers don't win, imagine the momentum they can use into next season.
Right.
And now all the wind is out of those sails.
That's the most devastating part. And listen, I've got a unique perspective on this. You guys know I root for the Golden State Warriors. I've lost a Game 7 as a fan of my team. I've watched my superstar player blow his Achilles in the Finals. I have a very unique perspective on this because the Warriors are really the only example of another team that's dealt with both of those instances that I can remember in recent memory.
Right.
Let me just go ahead and get this out here straight before Kwok gets on here at noon. It's a little bit different because of the injury. Losing a Game 7 in that stage in the NBA is probably the worst possible feeling as a sports fan. You play your whole season to get up to one moment and you lose.
Right.
And Draymond Green has said on his podcast that it was the worst experience of his life was losing 2016 Game Finals because it cuts into your summer, it cuts into your recovery time with how you can get your body right headed towards the next season. Everybody's body is beat into the ground. You just go through this grueling 2-month schedule where you're having to play every other day. You're going deep into series playing physical basketball against some of the best teams in the world. world, and you do all of that to get up to the moment where you see the trophy, it's in the building, the bright lights, the stars, the allure, and you have everything that you've worked for ripped away from you with nothing to show for it in the matter of minutes. And there's no worse feeling in sports than losing a Game 7 or a national championship that's do or die or a Super Bowl, but I almost think that Game 7 is worse than a college football, baseball, basketball, whatever it may be, because I can stomach losing one game a lot easier than winning three, losing three, getting up to this big moment and just laying an egg when it matters the most. And I don't think that that was necessarily the case for Indiana. They had a lot of fight, but after Halliburton went down, they just did not have enough gas in the tank.
And Texter 9383 is right. I guess that, like, what makes it more painful is the thing about Halliburton is that we'll never know if he would have dropped 30 and led them to a title or scored six with 12 turnovers. I think you were leaning towards more of the 30-point performance and taking the, you know, towards the title, but you're right. We'll never know. Quez gets in, I thought, with a very interesting question. He says, do y'all think the Pacers could have won without Halliburton? Byron, they needed somebody to step up like Siakam.
I actually think the answer to that is yes. I think that they had a path to winning the game yesterday, but John, I want to take it in a different angle. I don't think it was as much about offense. I thought they should have played zone. I thought the minute that Halliburton went down, I would have gone to zone. OKC had no idea what to do when Denver played 2-3 zone in the Western Conference semifinals. And when Rick Carlisle coached in a Game 7 previously in the finals, he played six games of man-to-man, and then he pulled out zone in Game 7. I really, for the life of me, would have bet that we were going to see some 2-3 zone yesterday, and we just never saw it. And it felt like in the second half, John, they were picking on McConnell every time they could get him on a ball screen. And he played great, but like, the dude's 5'11". He's not going to be able to guard Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for 48 minutes.
No, he's not. I think when you're looking at the Pacers, I mean, yes, you should be disappointed by what Nesmith gave you. I mean, 3 points in a Game 7 is pretty embarrassing. But to me, I think the performance that was so tough, and we talked about this on Friday, that if Indiana was going to win, they had to have elite performances from T.J. McConnell, Mathurin, and Obi Toppin.
Yep.
And you only got two out of the three, because Obi Toppin used all of his shooting earlier in the series and decided that there was nothing left for him to contribute.
Right. And Mathurin went hero ball in the fourth, but I will say that the 24-13 figure is a little bit misleading because the majority of that came when the game was out of reach. Not trying to discredit him, but he really was not good enough for the first 2.5 to 3 quarters, and credit where it's due, he was the only one that showed up in the fourth quarter.
Right.
But it was a 20-point deficit at that point. We can respect it. They got it back to 9 with like 4 minutes left and made a little bit of a false hopey comeback, right? But ultimately, they didn't have the horses without Halliburton.
They didn't take the comeback seriously without Halliburton, who leads all these comebacks.
Yeah, and Texter points out that Hallie had 9 points in 7 minutes. What's unfortunate is the stats that showcase when Hallie makes his first shot and misses his first shot. When he makes his first shot, he's a 24-point-per-game scorer in postseason play. He saw that first one go through the hoop. He got into a rhythm. He was getting to his spots and hit a couple step-back threes. And, you know, he was yelling at the crowd. They panned to him at that first media timeout when the game was 16-16. He's chirping at the OKC fans. He's fired up. And my heart just breaks for Tyrese Halliburton, man. It really does. I mean, an Achilles injury is the worst in sports because it's not just that moment and that game slipping away. It's the entire subsequent year that you know you're going to have to work to. It's the hardest sport, the hardest injury in sports to rehab from is a torn Achilles. So for Halliburton, Dame, and Tatum to all go down in one playoffs, all in the Eastern Conference, all to the same devastating injury that doesn't just ruin your current season and playoff run, but ruins the subsequent season. But to be honest, man, my heart breaks for those three teams. It really does. The Celtics, the Bucks, and the Pacers.
And what hurts for those fan bases is what's going to come of it.
Yes.
Because we've talked about with Boston that this is an opportunity in a window in which you can shed a lot of bad contracts. You know, I think this doesn't force Indiana's hand to make them a serious contender in the East. I think they can get away with not having to spend money here. And with Milwaukee, then they'll be like, okay, we're not going to have Lillard for a year. We're going to trade Giannis, and we'll just start the rebuild when there's no plans of Dame Lillard even being a part of the rebuild.
Right, and he's getting 60 M's a year, not even going to play this season,
yep.
Then coming back on a torn Achilles at age 35.
Who will demand a trade request to Miami again.
Yep.
And, you know, I hate it for those fan bases. Not so much as Boston because they have like 400 NBA championships in their you know, trophy case, but like, you saw something here, especially with Indiana and with Milwaukee. Not so much Milwaukee. But we saw the success of the small market in these playoffs. We saw the success of the small market team being able to go up against the big boys, if you will, right? I mean, look at the two teams we have here in the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
Both in a small market. I wonder, is this going to encourage these teams and some of these other small market teams to invest, or are they going to be like, man, I don't know, because you're one Achilles tear away from just selling everybody and blowing the whole thing up again. Do we even want to go through all the effort?
Yeah.
I'm very curious to see what the reaction to front offices are coming out of these playoffs.
Because I got to say right now, if I am Orlando, Cleveland, New York, I am licking my chops, and this is my best chance.
How is New York licking? They don't have a coach?
They don't have a coach, which is fair in its own right now.
I mean, Jalen Brunson's just going to coach. He's going to be the Jackie
coach.
Moon of the New York Knicks.
I don't
make him the GM, too.
I said at the time, and I didn't really understand it, I don't think he's a world beater. Firing Thibodeau remains that's the furthest the Knicks have gone in how many years?
In 25 years.
You beat the defending champions. You play like a crazy competitive series. You get beat at the buzzer twice in the Eastern Conference Finals. You're right there on the brink of a championship appearance, and you fire your guy?
Because James Dolan got involved again. He hadn't been involved for a while. They go and find success. His ego gets bruised. He gets involved again and fires the coach so he can make it about himself.
It's crazy.
This is what bad owners do in professional sports, and he is certainly in the camp of a bad owner. I mean, the reason the Knicks got good the last couple of years is because he was part of the group that was opening the Sphere in Las Vegas, and he was distracted.
That is true.
And spent zero time around the facility, so they got good when he wasn't there. All of a sudden, James Dolan back in the building. We're doing James Dolan things.
And we're firing the coach that just took us further
the
than we
The most successful
years.
Coach you have had in like 30 years.
Yeah.
You're going to fire him. Because you didn't get enough credit. It's like I'm watching the Last Dance documentary again.
Yeah, it's
crazy. With Jerry Reinsdorf and the short general manager and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, egos are a crazy thing in sports.
Egos are a crazy thing in sports. A couple things to hit on next year's outlook. Then I want to talk Achilles. Then we'll take a quick break. I look at a team like Orlando right now, and I feel like they're primed to take the leap into a top three seed in the Eastern Conference. I look at a team like Atlanta, and I think they're one move away from being uber competitive and potentially finding themselves back in the Eastern Conference Finals like they were 3 years ago. I look at a team like Cleveland, who genuinely, I told Sam this last night in the living room, they need to be relegated to Slovenia if they don't make the NBA Finals next year because they just won 64 games. They're going to improve their roster, and the three main teams that were their competition have all dropped out with superstar injuries tearing their Achilles.
Right.
So I think Cleveland is your runaway favorite. But I will say this about Indiana. Indiana is structured in a fashion to where I do not think the regression will be as immense as many anticipate without Tyrese Haliburton in the fray. I still think Indiana is a playoff caliber team without Haliburton. I don't think they're a contender, and I also think that's part of the rest of the East being very, very weak.
Oh, and 10 teams have to make the playoffs next year, right?
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, with if you can keep a lot of the core intact and, you know, find somebody who's, I mean, I say it's loosely, replacement level for Tyrese Haliburton, but, you know, you're not going to find a one-for-one replacement out there in this league. I mean, yeah, you could probably still make a crack at it because you still have the Washington Wizards, you still have the Charlotte Hornets, who are not anywhere close to competing and attempting to win basketball games. So, I mean, I get it. I also think that it may be a lost season in 25-26 for the Indiana Pacers, the way this one just ended.
Yeah.
Because like you were just talking about, you don't, like Draymond Green had talked about, I guess you were quoting him, you don't have your off season, you don't get to spend as much time in Cancun, you don't get to have as much rest and recovery time.
You don't reset.
Well, and then you're not going to go put the work in to get your body right because you don't have as much time, so you need to make sure you get all your beach and vacation time in. Yeah, I think it'll probably be a lost season for the Pacers next year because I have a tough time imagining them getting up off the mat and being ready to go dominate in October.
Right. Like I think they're good enough to be your six or your seven in a weak East and maybe make a series competitive. But it goes without saying, like this team doesn't win anything without Tyrese Haliburton.
Not in terms of chasing a championship.
Yes, no. They could maybe get in and win a playoff series, but that's really the most I'm willing to give Indiana at a time like this. But I'll tell you guys right now, the two teams that I would be buying all of your stock and your equity in right now in the Eastern Conference headed towards next year: Orlando and Atlanta. Young cores, superstar players, flexibility to add more, which Orlando has already done, and it's teams that we've seen in the playoffs pretty frequently in the years past, and it's a team that we see on the ascension. And the name I'll continue to reiterate as the difference maker next year in the East, John, Jalen Johnson for the Hawks is a top 20, 25 player in the league. People don't know about him yet because he's fractured his fibula this year, 30 games in. I do think the Hawks are going to be capable of making some noise, but it's Cleveland's league to lose next year as far as I'm concerned.
We'll just have to agree to disagree on the Atlanta Hawks as we stand here today.
Probably real quick,
before we take a break, Oklahoma City Thunder, very deserving champion. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, one of the better individual seasons in terms of accolades and accomplishments we have seen in quite some time. They have a million draft picks moving forward, and that's not an exaggeration.
Right.
Where do they go from here?
Man, it's an interesting sort of scenario.
Sam Presti just won his first title after being the general manager there for 18 years.
Yeah. This is like
what
his master plan.
What's next?
His master plan paid off. And when you look right now at the situation that Oklahoma City is in, with all of the draft capital that they command and with everything that they have going for them at a time like this, it goes without saying that I think the number one and the number two priorities are locking up Jalen Williams and Chet Holmgren long term, because people are going to criticize Chet for the offensive numbers. I don't remember a more impactful defender throughout the course of a singular playoff run in his second year in the NBA than Chet Holmgren. I thought he was so good defensively throughout the course of the series, and obviously Jalen Williams really started to evolve into that primary second option for OKC as well. It starts there for me, John. You got to find a way to lock up your boys, and if you lock up your big three and Shai, Chet, and Jalen Williams, that gives you a really high floor for the indefinite future. What has to give in these type of situations is the tertiary pieces. It's your role players off the bench, like a guy like Cason Wallace. It's a Caruso. It's a Hartenstein, who's currently commanding $29 million a year.
Oh boy.
You know, do you want to potentially move him? Can you use some of that draft capital to replace and replenish your bench? Because I think that's the answer at the end of the day. What made OKC so dominant in the regular season, and the method, or the sauce, if you will,
right,
for success in the regular season in the 2025 NBA is depth and athleticism, because teams don't try as hard on defense, the game is officiated differently, and it's a super high pace of play. So you want as many young athletes on rookie contracts that are ready to get after it, coming in off your bench, because they're going to play hard, they're going to play hungry, and that's what OKC has managed to do, developing a guy like Wiggins and locking him up long term. Isaiah Joe out of free agency on a cheap dollar, drafting Cason Wallace, trading for Alex Caruso. Presti has legitimately all options available to him. He's got a ridiculous war chest of assets and draft picks to potentially make moves this offseason. But I think that the main thing for OKC here is windows close quickly in this league. Don't get complacent. Upgrade your roster this offseason while you have the chance to, because if you do what some teams have done after winning championships, like a Milwaukee or like, you know, maybe even a Phoenix who just went to the title a couple years back, and you get complacent, that's how you get bit in the butt and that's how you regress. So always just be focused on, you know, improving the roster and taking that next step in your ascension would be my long-winded answer on OKC going forward.
I like it. I like it. Makes a ton of sense.
We are going to take a quick break here from Upcountry Fiber and Seneca. We remind you, we are the pre-party to the party today as the customer appreciation celebration starts at noon. Skins hot dogs, water, soda, Pink Mama's ice cream, and more. And in the upcoming segment, we're going to visit with Max Crawford and Brandon Smith, get their thoughts and commentary on Upcountry Fiber and all the great things that they've done for this company and all the great work that they've done for the folks of the upstate of South Carolina. Stick with us here on The Roar. More on the other side after a quick break.
Hey, 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 it's the Queen of Clean here at Royal Flush Toilet Rentals. Give us a call at 864-238-8800. We've got your portable toilet rentals, hand wash stations, luxury restroom toilet trailers, septic tank services, and holding tanks. So whenever you need to speak with the Queen of Clean, call Royal Flush at 864-238-8800.
It's bow time. Introducing Bojangles' new breakfast burrito. It's your favorite crispy bow rounds, savory sausage, fluffy eggs, cheese, and southern gravy all wrapped in a warm flour tortilla. But hurry, it's here for a limited time. It's bow time.
The heat is on and your HVAC system's feeling it. If it's getting up there in age, now's the time to call Blue Ridge Heating and Air. They offer free estimates, and when Mark, their friendly field supervisor, stops by, he'll bring you a bottle of their signature hot sauce, Furnace Fuel. It's spicy and free. You could qualify for federal tax credits, local utility rebates, and they offer financing too. Plus, save $400 with their system replacement coupon. Just call or book online at BlueRidgeHeatingAir.com.
When you're hiring, have you ever felt like you're missing out on meeting truly great candidates for your roles? it seems impossible to find them. But they have to be out there somewhere, right? Well, they're not hard to find when you know where to go. And that place is ZipRecruiter. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/radio. ZipRecruiter helps 10 million people with their job search every day. And because these people are actively looking for jobs just like yours, it's easy to find the right person right away. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. But if you're not using ZipRecruiter, you're missing out. So see what it's like when the impossible is easy. When you go to ZipRecruiter.com/radio right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. Once again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/radio. ZipRecruiter.com/radio. Never miss out on great candidates with ZipRecruiter.
Spring is here, and summer's right around the corner. Is your backyard ready? At Harbin Lumber Company, we have everything you need to build the perfect deck for grilling, chilling, and making memories. From top-quality wood and composite decking to railings and accessories, we've got it all. Durable, beautiful, and built to last. Your dream deck starts at Harbin Lumber. Visit Harbin Lumber today and get decked out for the season. Call or stop by, because great decks start with great materials. Visit us in-store or online at harbinlumber.com.
Trust me, if they could do planes and trains, they would. In the meantime, Pendleton Tire Company does automobiles, trucks, and SUVs with trusted service on tires, lift kits, brakes, wheel alignments, and custom accessories for nearly 55 years. Pendleton Tire Company has taken care of generation after generation. Now it's your turn to discover why folks trust the team at Pendleton Tire Company. Open weekdays from 8 to 5, the Pendleton Tire Company on Mechanic Street in Pendleton. PendletonTire.com.
This is Walt Deptula inviting you to join me each and every afternoon from 3 to 7 for Road Rage, America's most informative and entertaining sports talk show, where we cover it all: baseball, basketball, football, hockey, boxing, UFC, bowling, the National Cat Fight League. We don't care what it is, from 3 to 7, we cover it. Join me each and every afternoon. Do not miss an episode of Road Rage.
Hey, Tinsley, why don't we use EasyCater to order food for staff lunches?
Because my 46-page acronym system is so easy. I just have to salad, stay alert to late-arriving deliveries, pie, put in expenses, and Google Pie. Go out and get everyone's preferences and allergy information.
That's supposed to be simple?
No, simple is Steven, Irma, and Margie prefer lasagna and empanadas.
OMG.
No need to make work life more complicated. Just use EasyCater, the easy way to get food for work.
Introducing the new Dell AI PC, powered by the Intel Core Ultra Processor. It helps do your busy work for you, so you can fast forward through editing images, designing presentations, generating code, debugging code, summarizing meeting notes, finding files, managing your schedule, responding to Jim's long emails, leaving all the time in the world for the things you actually want to do. No offense, Jim. Get a new Dell AI PC starting at $749.99 at Dell.com/AI-PC. How those ahead stay ahead.
Live and local sports talk coming to you from the Upcountry Fiber Studios.
This is 105.5 and 97.5 The Roar.
Serving the 5 counties of the South Carolina upstate, Upcountry Fiber is a stronger connection.
Are you incensed that you missed one of our daily shows?
And what do we have? We have an altercation of some sort down in the field. Shane Beamer is incensed, irate about something.
Stay calm. You can listen to all of our past shows at theroarfm.com and click on the podcast tab.
We welcome you back in, everybody. Facts on Sports with Faxon and John continues right here on The Roar. And we remind you, we are out at 9 Boardwalk Plaza in Seneca with the great folks at Upcountry Fiber Seneca and are now joined on the airwaves by the district manager. You've also been described as the do-it-all man with the plan, Max Crawford. Max, we're excited to have you here today, man.
Oh, man, thank y'all for coming by. This is a big day for us, and we're extremely excited.
Yeah, it's exciting for us, too, you know, being able to meet everybody. Some of the faces that make everybody in the community's life so much easier and so much better has been a blessing here today. And Max, you know, inform the audience a little bit about what your role is with Upcountry Fiber.
Yeah, so like you said, I'm kind of a do-it-all. I get out into the community. You know, we do lots of community events. I do a lot of that. I deal with a lot of HOAs, and really just general management up here.
For sure. And what does your day-to-day look like with what you're doing with the folks at Upcountry Fiber? We visited with Chris earlier. Obviously, he's the CEO. But he bragged on you and the rest of your team and what you've been able to accomplish here in Seneca. And, you know, obviously the waves have been felt throughout the upstate with the great work you guys continue to do.
Yeah, man. We're really excited about what we've done, what we're going to continue to do. And, you know, you said it best when you said our team. None of this would have been possible without, you know, the team we have. Everybody always talks about, you know, you go to work and you're with family. But when we go to work, we really are. I feel like it's a big family.
What are some of the things that you have seen from the growth? Like, you know, we were just talking before we went on air about Hurricane Helene and some of the destruction that was done here in the upstate. What were y'all able to do to, I know we're going to talk with Brandon here about some of the more commercial stuff, but, like, from a residential standpoint, well, what kind of work were y'all able to really do in the community and, like, you know, from a response time with Helene? Because that's something that is still, you know, we were talking about, I'm down from the low country, been around a lot of hurricane scenarios, but have never seen anything like that with the amount of down trees, down lines, and things like that. Talk about what y'all were able to do in that time with the residential standpoint, kind of like how your team was able to shine.
Yeah, so I didn't think that there'd ever been an event that we would have been in the situation we were. But, you know, again, but go back to our team. We work night and day. We have people from all over the country come in to help us. And, you know, the response from our team and our folks, you know, we didn't quit until everybody was back up. And, you know, we got a lot of residential customers, but those residential customers, you know, they've also, you got medical things that you've got to, you know, working from home, you know, it's residential, but it's extremely important. It's kind of like a commercial.
Well, I mean, when you think about it, like at that time, you had everybody, so the schools were shut down, so you had kids trying to do e-learning from home. You had everybody working from their homes because it wasn't safe to get out on the roadways. I mean, it was what y'all were doing was as important as just about anything going on in the upstate at that time.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And it's just wild to see, you know, that. And then the response we heard from people with some of your competitors maybe saying that, oh, we didn't have, you know, a great response time getting back online, but everybody we talked to that has Upcountry Fiber certainly didn't have any of those issues.
Yeah, we were very proud of our response. And, you know, we never thought we would have had anybody down for as long as we did. But we got our network back up a lot quicker than, you know, with most of our competitors.
Yep.
And we're continuing to visit with the district manager and Max Crawford. Max, what is the key as you continue to emphasize team? And Chris, the CEO, continues to emphasize team. Well, you're really the leader of this team in a lot of ways. How do you take on that role, and how have you been able to manage such an effective team that works for you and with you to ensure great quality customer service to everybody here in the upstate?
Yeah, I mean, it just starts with our people. You know, it's easy to do what I do when we've got such great team that works with us. You know, it starts from the Chris, you know, our head all the way down. I mean, it's our entire team. It's just, I'm very proud to be a part of it.
For sure. And we're gonna let you get out of here in a second here, Max, and have you swap the headset off to your guy Brandon back here who's waiting. But before we let you go, talk to our audience a little bit about where they can check out Upcountry Fiber, how they can get in touch with you and your great team that's doing so much great work here in the upstate of South Carolina.
Yeah, you go to our website, upcountryfiber.com. You can call in. It's 888-760-2111. Y'all can come by our office. We love to see faces in here. And, you know, that's another thing we're proud of. If you want to see a face and talk to a human being, you come to our office or call us. You know, our customer service is our number one.
How about that? That's Max Crawford, a.k.a. Mr. Do-It-All, John.
Absolutely.
I think that might be the new nickname
for Max. And the voice on some of these Upcountry Fiber commercials you hear on our airwaves now.
Well, I'm hoping one of these days y'all are going to ask me to come sing. I can't sing. No.
If you had to sing, like karaoke, you get one song for your life to impress somebody, what would your song be and why?
Oh, probably Nice and Slow by Usher.
Nice and Slow.
Yeah.
Love that. That's
I absolutely love that. We'll get Brandon in here on that note. Max Crawford, ladies and gentlemen, the district
manager. Thank you
very
much.
We appreciate you, Max. That was a blast.
Guys.
Yes, sir. Love that answer as well.
I didn't have Usher on my bingo card.
I didn't have Usher on the bingo card either.
It's nice to get a curveball thrown every now and then. I like that.
I'm pretty terrible at karaoke and singing myself. I would probably go more towards country. I'm not even a big country music guy, but I feel like that's just the easiest way to succeed in karaoke.
Not a chance on God's green earth you're going to ever see me on a karaoke stage.
Not a chance.
You don't gotta worry about that.
Not
nope.
a chance. We're going to bring in Brandon Smith now, business solutions consultant. He's kind of a do-it-all with the sales team. Brandon, we appreciate you joining. And, you know, before we get into the Upcountry Fiber stuff, we're going to bring you in on the karaoke topic. You get one song just like Max. What would your karaoke song be and why?
Hey, it's hard to follow up, Max. I'm not a singer, so I'm going to go with Tequila. Two words.
How about that? That's absolutely awesome. So we got Brandon Smith here. Brandon, talk us a little bit through about what your day-to-day looks like working with a guy like Max and working with the great people here in Seneca.
Yeah, no problem. Max talked a lot about team. Max is our glue guy. I know y'all are sports podcast. You know, Max is the guy that kind of keeps us going.
Yeah.
I specifically work with businesses, commercial sales, anything like that. So anywhere from your corporations to your mom and pops, we just work hard to try to take care of them. You know, we are a provider, but really more important, we're a partner. We try to work alongside them and help them whatever that need might be.
And Brandon, what inspired you personally to get involved with the folks here at Upcountry Fiber?
Yeah, no problem. I'm a local boy. I grew up here. Okay. Went to school here. Went to Clemson. I've been familiar with the co-ops, both West Carolina when I went to Lander from undergrad. Got familiar with them as well as Blue Ridge. So it's just nice to help the community that you know, work with some local business owners.
What are some of the things that you've noticed with the growth of some of the commercial space here with Upcountry Fiber? And then where do you kind of see – what's your vision of like the next couple of years of the growth for the, you know, the commercial side of things?
Yeah, so we are heavy residential. We do a lot in the residential space, but specifically for commercial, we're booming, especially Oconee. I know that Oconee's got a couple industrial parks that are growing. We're trying our best to just be there for them, do what we can. A lot of people think, you know, smaller company, we can't do the larger things that, you know, an AT&T Spectrum could do, but that's not true. Any level of IT, we're able to peer in Atlanta and Charlotte. So any of that, you know, 10 gig, 100 gig capability, we're able to do that. And we're just working to be there for those groups. And specifically, as we continue to grow in the business space, just make sure that we can hit all of those points that a business would need to be successful.
And Brandon, you're a younger guy that's, you know, had a lot of success in your career already. How have the folks at Upcountry Fiber really put you in a position to succeed and continue to grow in your role?
Yeah, no problem. So they put you in situations where you can grow, but they also support you on the back end. It's a great team, great group of people, young and old, that give advice and or give you the freedom to, you know, do some stuff on your own. They like to see you take some chances and then give you good feedback based off of those.
And how does that team-oriented approach that, you know, kind of starts with Chris as the CEO and radiates down to Max and the rest of the crew here in Seneca, how does that impact you on a day-to-day basis with your role and what you're trying to do for some of these clients?
Yeah, that's important. So we actually have monthly meetings with everybody. We also have, you know, weekly meetings within these smaller teams. And we just work on, you know, hey, what are the push points? What are the issues these businesses are having? What are the issues that customers are seeing, and how can we improve? We kind of bounce those off each other, work as a team, say, hey, you know, what about this? What about this? And then we take that to the customer and try to help them.
We were talking about some of, like, you know, the bigger, you know, rivals and competitors and things like that. But if you had to sum it down to one thing that sets Upcountry Fiber apart from the competition, what would that be?
It's definitely customer service. I mean, we have a great product. There's other competitors that have great products. But as far as customer services, you're not getting it better than here. You know, every customer gets our personal cell phone. I know me and Max, especially on the business side, if you have an issue, you know, give us a call. You come see us. Like Max said, you can see someone in person. We're all local boys. We're all co-op minded. We're all about the customer. So if you want to really have a customer service experience like another, you need to come to Upcountry Fiber.
You're not just giving out a 1-800 number or anything like that.
No, we are giving a local number. So that can be good and bad sometimes, but we're here for you. We're here for you any time of day.
Absolutely. If you want pristine, you know, local type of service and great customer service, you need to go with the folks at Upcountry Fiber. As we're continuing to visit with Brandon Smith, business solutions consultant, does a lot of great stuff in the sales space for the folks here at Upcountry Fiber. And Brandon, I kind of wanted to ask you a few questions before we take a break and let you get out of here and back to your job. First and foremost would be, you know, what was your perspective on the whole situation with Hurricane Helene? We asked Max about it. We know he was out, you know, doing all that he was doing in the community at the time, but I feel like you guys turned a lot of heads for the right reasons at a time like that was tragic for so many. You were able to be kind of the radiating light throughout amidst of a lot of the chaos. On the sales side of things, how did that impact you, your day-to-day, and what you were able to do for the community here in the upstate during a time of need?
Yeah, we had a lot of meetings ahead of time, you know, to try to prep for this, but again, you know, no one even beforehand knew the volume of what we were going to see. So we were just kind of trying to kind of gauge an idea of what's going to happen, and obviously, you know, no one was prepared. But as far as sales goes, you know, we weren't actively selling. We were working on getting the network back up, taking care of customers. So really, my role there was just customer relations, you know, reaching out to guys like, hey, what's going on? Are you good? Are you good? And it was really cool. We got to see some awesome situations where, you know, as Blue Ridge customers, maybe they had power, or maybe they had the Blue Ridge generator systems, you know, that's one of their lines, where the fiber is still working off of a generator.
No
power, but still have an internet. So that was awesome to see that. But it's also great to, you know, keep that one-on-one communication with some of the larger customers and just say, hey, you know, I haven't forgot about you. We've got a crew working on your stuff.
And what was the inspiration behind an event like today with this customer appreciation event at noon? Because you guys are doing a lot of great things. You're rolling out the red carpet for a lot of the folks that make you and your success possible on the business side of things. And really giving back seems like a priority here for you folks at Upcountry Fiber.
Yeah, definitely. Customers are obviously first. So this event we're super excited about. Super to see some of the customers we get to represent. Also, we love doing business with people who do business with us. So Skins, for instance, they're giving us hot dogs. They are a great customer of ours. We just love partnering with local communities.
Yeah, that's awesome.
That's awesome stuff. Brandon, before we let you get out of here, how can folks get in contact with you, the folks at Upcountry Fiber, and all the great work you're doing?
Yeah, no problem. Check us out online, upcountryfiber.com. If you want to register your interest, go to Gig Up Blue Ridge. And then also give us a call, 888-760-2111.
That is Brandon Smith. Does a lot of stuff on the sales side, business solutions consultant. Brandon, you are a natural. Great job, as always.
Thank you, guys. Go Tigers.
Sure. Absolutely. And to go Tigers. That's just absolutely perfect stuff.
That's how you got to end it right
there. That's how you got to end it. Absolutely. We remind you, folks, customer appreciation celebration starts at noon. Skins, hot dogs, water, soda, ice cream, and more. We've had three great guests with Chris, Max, and Brandon, and we've still got Riley in the final hour of the program to catch up with as well. And excited to chat with him. We will continue live from the Upcountry Fiber in Seneca on the other side of a short break for the final segment of hour number two with Vaxson and John right here on The Roar. Stick with us.
At QC Kinetics, we're all about keeping you in the game, helping you get lasting relief from joint pain. That's why we're excited to announce that QC Kinetics is now partnering with the National Pickleball League. So many of our satisfied patients are avid pickleball players, and they're thrilled with how we've helped them get back on the court. As lead sponsor of the National Pickleball League, we're committed to help pickleball fans of all ages with the latest, most advanced regenerative cell treatments. These treatments use your body's own healing power, revitalizing and restoring damaged joint tissue the natural way, with no drugs, no surgery, and no downtime. Whether you're a pickleball fanatic or enjoy golf or running or tennis, stay in the game with help from QC Kinetics. QC Kinetics, proud to promote active, pain-free living as a lead sponsor of the National Pickleball League. Call now for your free consultation.
Call QC Kinetics, 864-448-3772. That's 864-448-3772. 864-448-3772.
All right, are you tired of your dusty, cracked, and stained garage floor? Do what all your neighbors are doing and have it coated. But please, do yourself a favor and don't hire just anybody who says that they do floor coatings. You'll regret it. I'm Jake Wilson, owner of Iron Drive Floor Coatings. We've been the premier concrete coating company in the upstate since 2011. We take pride in doing things the right way, with quality employees, equipment, and materials. You get the very best with Iron Drive. Visit our website today for a free quote at irondrivegaragefloors.com.
Book your next party at Carson Steakhouse in Anderson with a large private dining room to suit all of life's celebrations, corporate and social group events. Host a family or school reunion to remember. Book your reservation and they handle the rest. Double fried chicken wings, fresh baked yeast rolls, hand-cut steaks, grilled teriyaki salmon, and fresh strawberry shortcake, just to name a few delicious menu items. Make your reservation today. Call 226-9400. Again, that's 226-9400. Carson Steakhouse, Anderson.
Want to win the game? Put in your best players. The Trammell & Mills Law Firm hits the field running all the way to the end zone. If you've been in a wreck, gotten hurt at work, or suffered nursing home abuse, you want these guys on your team. They're local, they're experienced, and they're hungry for victory. They want to get you the money you deserve when fighting insurance companies. Call 485-8585 or go to TrammellAndMills.com. The Trammell & Mills Law Firm, ready to win your game.
Are you looking to take your lawn to the next level in 2025? At Carolina Top Dressing, we are committed to serving the upstate and bringing golf course type practices to your home, including aeration, top dressing, dethatching, and soil conditioning. Also, ask us about our latest top dressing amendment, Carolina Mix, or sign up for any of our turf services by visiting us at carolinatopdressing.com for your free quote. And as always, go Tigers!
Buying health insurance for the first time? Don't put all your info online. The scammers won't stop. But don't worry, we've got you. Call today, 467-8738. I'm Guy, the insurance guy, and what we do is simple. We make health insurance easier.
Hey, ladies, mark your calendars for the 16th Dabo Swinney Ladies Clinic, presented by The Roar. Join us on Saturday, July 19th at Little John Coliseum for a day filled with football, shopping, and fighting for a cure for breast cancer. Meet the 2025 Tiger players and staff and shop from over 40 amazing vendors. Registration is open until Friday, June 27th. All proceeds benefit breast cancer initiatives in South Carolina. You can register at dabosallinteam.com. That's dabosallinteam.com. Go Tigers. See y'all in July.
Sports talk for people who love sports. Come on, there's no need to complicate things.
It can't be forced. It should just come about effortlessly.
We are The Roar, where every day is game day.
We welcome you back in, everybody. Fax and Childress, John Hite, continuing on a Monday morning on The Roar, live from the Upcountry Fiber offices here in Seneca. Real quick, before we get back into the action in the sports world, folks, you know the Dabo Swinney Ladies Clinic by now. It's the 16th of this upcoming month. That is when you need to mark your calendars for. You can join on Saturday, July 19th at Little John Coliseum. It's the 16th annual Dabo Swinney Ladies Clinic presented by The Roar. A day filled with football, shopping, and fighting a cure for breast cancer. That is July 19th at Little John Coliseum, which is a Saturday. You can meet the 2025 Tiger players. You can meet the staff. You can shop from over 45 amazing vendors. Registration is open until Friday, June 27th, and all proceeds benefit breast cancer initiatives in South Carolina. Register at dabosallinteam.com. That is dabosallinteam.com, and just so blessed and fortunate that we're able to partner with Coach Sweeney. Those amazing folks over at the All In Foundation, John, I know that's pretty personal for both of us.
Yep.
So getting to do that each and every year is just something that will never not be special for us here at The Roar.
No, absolutely. It's a great partnership, and I encourage everyone to attend.
We've talked NBA Finals. We've talked College World Series. We've got other things to talk about throughout the course of the program today. And this is where we usually roll around to Atlanta Braves time. So I'll just open up the phone lines. I'll open up the Adams Co-Roofing text lines. I'll let you guys rip off some of your thoughts and concerns and complaints and et cetera. But I'm so upset that Chris Sale got hurt. I don't really even care that they lost 2 out of 3, if you want me to be completely honest.
Let's parse it out a little bit here. Because let's talk about the series first.
We do. We got to
talk about
the
injury, and then we can talk about projecting forward, because the Braves do play tonight.
They do.
7:10 first pitch. We will join pregame in progress at the conclusion of Road Rage with Walt Teptula. I'm just going to ask simply here, Faxon. We're in here Friday morning, in the studio Friday morning, coming off the sweep of the bets, and there was a ton of positive momentum.
Yeah.
The vibes were high. Everyone was feeling good. And I'll just simply ask, what happened?
So headed into the weekend, I think that we went off the air Friday, and I said if the Braves were going to lose a game this weekend, it was going to be that Friday game with a 19-year-old starting right in his first major league start. And that's kind of where I want to start things, because with the Chris Sale injury, which we'll get to on the back burner, Didier Fuentes is a part of this rotation now. This is a guy that has not been sent down to AAA. Originally, our thought was spot start.
Right.
You know, you're bumping Sale and Schwellenbach back for the Mets series because you want your 1-2 punch at the head of the snake for that series. And just reality is, with Sale injured now, Fuentes is going to have to start more games. So you look at the box score and you see 5 innings pitched, 6 hits, 4 earned runs, 3 strikeouts, 1 walk, and you're like, okay, it's a fine start. It was kind of what I anticipated. I told you guys he wasn't going to go more than 5 innings, threw 87 pitches. The 4 earned runs aren't great, but John, I actually think he pitched much better than the Braves, you know, than the box score would indicate, and that maybe some of the Braves fan base believes that he pitched. And, you know, a part of the reason I say that is he really made one mistake. I thought he pitched really, really quality baseball for the majority of this outing, and he threw a first-pitch curveball low and in to Sanchez, and Sanchez pumped it with two on, two out in the bottom of the third inning. After that, he calmed things down for the subsequent two innings, and, you know, for the majority of this outing, I saw some really impressive things. It's important to remember, the kid's 20. He was in high A ball 2.5 months ago, and he has quickly ascended the ladder into the major leagues. He had a ton of swing and miss stuff. I thought he looked pretty good, and the command was there. For a guy that just turned 20 to only walk one out of 87 pitches in five innings, I think is a big win. So I consider the Didier Fuentes experiment a success, even in a losing effort, because at the end of the day, your lineup only put up two runs anyways. So it didn't matter if he gave up one, two, or four runs. You were going to lose that game regardless. I'm pretty in on Didier Fuentes being a viable option going forward that can continue to grow and continue to learn at this level.
You know, I'm certainly interested to see what his stuff looks like against the, I guess what he'd be thrown against the Mets on Thursday.
I think that's the current rotation, okay, the way that things are shaking out, yes.
You know, very curious to see what he does look like against a lineup with a little more pop, but no, I tend to agree with you. I don't think that you should be sounding alarm bells or freaking out about anything like that with the with his first start at the major league level. You have to imagine nerves were a thing there, but once again, the bats decided not to show up.
Yeah, and that was the primary issue for Atlanta. So Braves dropped game one of the series, 6-2 to the Miami Marlins. Acuna with two hits. The rest of the team combined had six hits, and nobody else had a multi-hit game. You got one hit from Harris, one hit from Murphy, one hit from Ozuna, a hit and an RBI apiece from Olsen and Riley, and then a hit from Verdugo as well, Verdugo over Eli White remains criminal. We'll get to that towards the back end of the program. 654-ROAR is the number if you'd like to check in on the Atlanta Braves. And before we shift gears to the Saturday game, Texter gets in and says, I was super pleased with his start. If he can just get his control down, his stuff is electric and moves a lot, he will be crazy good. And that was really my main takeaway from Didier Fuentes' first career Major League Baseball start as well, is the stuff is A++, John. I mean, this kid is electric. His stuff is moving. He's got the velocity. He's got the confidence on the mound as well. It's really just about gaining more reps and experience at the major league level to date for Didier Fuentes, and I think he's going to continue to grow into his own as a major leaguer. And to be able to be on that stage as a 20-year-old, right, first major league start, you've only made one start in AAA, and to rise to the occasion and keep your club in the game, definitely something that's a positive for the Braves this past weekend, when there weren't many positives. So the only other positive of the weekend, outside of Acuna being the best player in baseball right now, would be the 7-0 win on Saturday over the Miami Marlins. Acuna, again, goes two for three runs scored, two walks. His on-base percentage is above 500. His batting average is now above 400, John. He's truly having a historic season, which sucks that the Braves are kind of wasting it elsewhere. But Matty O did not have a great game out in this one. However, Ozuna and Baldwin specifically came through with a big three-run shot. The Braves cruised. Grant Holmes continued to pitch great baseball for Atlanta, and this was more what we were anticipating coming into the weekend from a Braves team that swept the New York Mets, who led the National League.
No, it was more of what you wanted to see. I guess for me, it's just a little surprising that you got one game of what you wanted to see, when it looked like you had figured out a lot of the offensive woes. I mean, reminder, against the Mets, 5-5-7 were the three run totals against the Mets at home. But then you go on the road, and you scored 12 in three games.
Yep.
And it's not even that it was just 12. It was more of like the win you were scoring those runs. And I think a lot of the questions that I had about this lineup going into the weekend, after you had had the most success you had had all year, I'm not one to really care to say, yep, I was right.
No, yeah, you were.
I was right, man.
You were right on this one.
This is not a serious baseball team. The lineup is not serious, and the lineup is not taking the task at hand seriously.
It's that bottom four is just a black hole. I've got some numbers for you to further your point, because you're 100% correct, but like, to just oversimplify it, the Braves are playing too many liabilities on a daily basis to be a good baseball team right
correct.
now.
Correct, absolutely. And the problem is, are the guys who were not supposed to be a liability all of a sudden are becoming one, or have become one. It's not a starting to. This has been happening now for the entirety of this season.
You have two players on the team right now that are productive. Ronald Acuña Jr., Matt Olson, and the list ends. Seriously. Those two are the best at their position by WRC Plus and by WAR in the month of June. Think about that. All of baseball. Acuña's better than Aaron Judge right now. Matt Olson has passed Freddie Freeman in F-WAR and B-WAR this season. Don't tell the Braves fans base that. Don't tell them that. But seriously, those two guys are playing at all major league level. All right, you're going to get gold gloves from Olson. You're going to get a gold glove from Schwelly. Acuña is hitting the cover off the ball. He's playing the best baseball of his career as of right now. And then the other seven in the lineup are not pulling their weight. But, John, before I throw things back to you, listen to this and think about how unfathomable it is to think about, okay?
All right.
We use WRC Plus a lot, and again, I've explained the metric. 100 is league average. Everything above and below is percentile. Michael Harris is... It has a 57 WRC plus. That ranks 207th out of 211 players with 200 plate appearances. He's the fourth worst qualified hitter in baseball. Nick Allen's is 60, which means he's 203 out of 211. That is the eighth worst in baseball. Ozzie Albies is at 76, and he ranks 189. One third of the Braves' everyday players rank among the bottom 10% in production at the plate. Think about that. One third of the lineup is amongst the bottom 10 players in baseball.
Yep.
So you are starting on a daily basis three bottom 10 qualified hitters in baseball, and that is not a recipe to win baseball games. We can complain about Ozuna and Riley until the cows come home and Sean Murphy. Your problem is right there, and your problem is in the corner outfield where you're not getting enough from Verdugo, and your manager continues to start him over the superior option, which is Eli White. That's the Braves' problem right there.
Well, and listen, as much as we are pro-Eli White here, I mean, it's not like he's choosing to play Verdugo over Aaron Judge. Like, it's not like that level of egregious decision, but... Yeah, I said it before. I mean, I know Chad the Mailman, he's probably due to send us a text about how bad Nick Allen is. But I continue to say the only reason Nick Allen is a problem is because of Michael Harris, Alex Verdugo, and Ozzie Albies.
Yes.
That is the only reason he is a problem within your team and within your organization is because the other guys you have hitting ahead of him are worthless.
In 2023, you had the best version we've seen of Ozzie Albies hitting in the two-hole and carrying a lot of production in the lineup for that middle infield, and you were able to make up for it, John, because your shortstop was defensive-oriented in Arcia. Guess what? If you had 2023 Ozzie, nobody would be complaining about Nick Allen right now.
Yep.
Nick Allen's the best defensive shortstop in baseball. He is going to sleepwalk to a gold glove this year in the National League at that position. But
2 years ago, we praised the Atlanta Braves for having a gold glove shortstop that cost $2 million and who couldn't hit a baseball.
Yeah. And now it's it's not on him.
But what's the difference is you're not having a 40-70 season from Ronald Acuña. You're not getting 56 home runs from Matt Olson this year. Austin Riley is not batting .320 or whatever it was that year. Like, it's the other guys are around him are really putting a spotlight on the flaw in the roster construction.
I couldn't agree more. And, like, listen, if we want to nitpick, Nick Allen was not even signed anticipating to start for this baseball team. He's only been thrust into this role because of Arcia's underperformance. And then to further that point, I don't like hyperfixating on Allen as the weakest bat within the lineup because Michael Harris's statistics are worse than him. He has the same batting average, and his on-base percentage is 50 points lower. John,
and he costs 10 times more than Nick Allen.
It has been over 120 plate appearances since Michael Harris has drawn a walk. I kid you not.
120?
If you just went up there and took four pitches every time, or you just didn't swing the bat, you would draw a walk in 120 plate appearances. He is swinging at some of the worst out-of-the-zone pitches I've ever seen, and Texter gets in
and
says,
crazy.
Tell Michael Harris to get in that blue Bronco and drive straight to Gwinnett. I said the same thing yesterday, and like the Braves media has started to cling to this as well. I understand that you're in a position where you are not a really good ball club to date, and I understand that you're in a position where you're struggling at the plate, and Michael Harris does provide an immense amount of value with his defense and his base running,
sure.
But he's not getting on base right now, and in my opinion, you got a guy like Carlos Rodriguez that's hitting .323 in AAA. His OBP is north of .350. With your corner outfield struggles with Verdugo and White not producing, with Michael Harris being the worst offensive player in your lineup to date, I think it might be worth a stint in AAA for Michael Harris, and it might be worth trying to send him down there because right now he is swinging. He is the worst approach in Major League Baseball. He's swinging at the worst pitches I've ever seen. He needs a mental reset button.
I am not disagreeing, but what is one thing that is different between the Boston front office and the Atlanta front office? the Boston front office is openly trying to make cheap moves and cut costs and do things like that. Meanwhile, the Braves are carrying themselves, at least publicly, as like they have the same record as the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah.
I think Double A and the management and the ownership group and everybody involved does not want to have to deal with the backlash, does not have to deal with the bruised ego of sending somebody that you gave a ridiculous contract after 70 games. Like, they don't want to admit defeat, admit failure. Totally understand that. It's the human element is in play here. I think, and it's, you know, Boston doesn't clearly care about winning in this year. We've seen that in their actions through the front office. The Braves are still carrying themselves like they are a contender in 2025.
Yeah, and that's just not reality right now, you know, with the way that things have shaken out to date. I kid you not, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful here in the slightest. I know for a fact, just mathematically, that either of us could go up to the plate in 112 major league plate appearances and take a walk because I wouldn't swing the bat once.
Oh, gosh, no.
Michael Harris is swinging at pitches in the dirt. He is swinging at pitches at his head. Like, this isn't
He is swinging like me playing MLB The Show.
Exactly. Like, this is like I'm loading up a game in the background and I'm just bored, so I'm swinging at garbage. That's how he's treating his actual Major League Baseball ABs. And it's just like, I'm screaming at the television on a nightly basis, dude, take one pitch. Just take one singular pitch and, like, get ahead in a count. I wish there was a statistic to show how often players get ahead versus behind in counts, and we could kind of decipher between that, because I'm guessing that Michael Harris has been behind in the count in 99% of ABs all season. I'm being dead serious. It's the worst approach I've ever seen from an Atlanta Brave, and people need to stop calling him Jason Hayward 2.0, because his numbers would be a lot better if he were Jason Hayward 2.0 at the plate. Hayward's issue was never the bat, it was the field.
This is being offensive to Jason Hayward, and I'm not a Jason Hayward stand by any means.
It's a frustrating time to be a Braves fan, and on top of that, to add insult to injury, the Chris Sale injury is what we have to get to on the other side of a break, John, because I will say this. I could come in here on Monday morning, I could stomach 2 out of 3 losses to the Marlins if I knew that I had my gangster pitching staff throwing for the next 4 against New York. That is no longer the case, because Chris Sale has suffered multiple fractured ribs, just adding insult to injury in what's been the nightmare of the 2025 campaign for the Braves. 2 outs in the 9th inning, diving for a ball. Or 1 out in the 9th inning, rather, diving for the ball in a 5-run game, and he lands on the rib cage and he cracks 2 of them. We're being told a month to a month and a half is the tentative guess, but I've had broken ribs before, John, and that was not an injury that was easy to recover from. I had 3 broken ribs when I was like 11 years old playing soccer, and it took me 2.5 months to get back on the field full-fledged.
That ain't good.
That's one of those injuries that's really difficult to recover from, so we'll walk you through it in the upcoming hour of the program. We are live from the upcountry. Fiber in Seneca. We will update you with more on the other side.
WCCP-FM 105.5, Clemson, Greenville, Anderson. WAHT AM 1560, Cowpens. 97.5, Spartanburg. We are the Roar.